Welcome to the Loans on Demand podcast, the show where we flip the real estate status quo on its head and put loan officers into the driver's seat. We give you all the tools, strategies, resources, and mindset needed to modernize your mortgage business and thrive. And my name is Luke Shankula, aka Longform Luke, and this is the Loans on Demand podcast. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Loans on Demand podcast, the show where we help loan officers flip the status quo on real estate agents to put loan officers in the driver's seat. And I'm excited because today we have my friend, Alexa Faithful. She is a loan officer. She wrote a book in 2020, and she's got some other cool things that she's doing on social media. And actually, I met you, I think, back in about 2019 or so. And obviously, you know, we've known each other for a few years now and obviously seen kind of the growth and what you've been able to do. So excited to dive in, chat a little bit and learn a little bit more. So welcome to the show, Alexa.
Thank you so much for having me here, Luke. This is so much fun for me and it's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Well, give us a little background on who you are. What got you into the mortgage industry? Why are you still in the mortgage industry? Because obviously we're going through some crazy times right now.
Yeah, that is true. So I have been in the mortgage industry since 2016. Started out on the retail side of the business, working for multi-billion dollar retail lender, nationwide retail lender. I started as a processing assistant. So I was working with, you know, my branch manager. He was a producing branch manager, kind of processing his files in conjunction with his processor to learn the back end of the business. What drove me to getting into mortgages in the first place, the year before, I just had, you know, my first child, had just gotten married and wanted to buy the house, you know, the whole like kit and caboodle. And when we went to go apply for a mortgage and to get pre-approved, we were denied by the first two lenders that we spoke with, but we were not really given any type of clear feedback on why we didn't qualify for the loan. It was just like, hey, your credit sucks. Sorry, can't help you. So, you know, it took finding a loan officer that actually dissected, you know, our credit report and was like, well, you've got late payments on your student loans from last year and you've got this, that, and the other thing, right? Like, this is what you need to do to qualify. And so that was a real game changer for me because I was like, man, how many other people are out here trying to buy a home that are really more like 6 to 9 months away from being able to purchase a home, but they think that they're like 6 to 9 years away because they just keep getting turned down. So I was looking for a career change anyways at that point. Prior to mortgages, I was working as an executive recruiter and I just was really unhappy in that field. So, you know, starting on the processing side allowed me to really learn the business. And then I started originating full time about 6 to 12 months later. And then in 2019, I made the jump from retail to the wholesale to the broker channel, which was a great move for me. I'm now with CMS Mortgage Solutions based out of Virginia Beach. We're a small family-owned shop, but we're kind of like small but mighty. We have a lot of amazing connections throughout the country. It's a really, really great group. And being a broker has really just moved the needle in a big way in my career in lots of different arenas.
It's interesting to me that this isn't the first time I've heard the story of someone getting into mortgages because of the experience, the crappy experience that they had in trying to get their own mortgage. I mean, I've probably heard that 3 or 4 times in the last, I don't know, really in the last maybe 10 or 15 episodes, a couple of people have brought that up. They said specifically, like, one of them was a veteran who got in and was trying to get a VA loan and was, you know, denied. They didn't pull a certificate of eligibility or something like that. I don't remember exactly the story, but it's interesting how that works. And I do find that, unfortunately, a lot of loan officers will throw people in the trash that are not ready to buy in the next 60 to 90 days. They just don't believe those people are worth working with. To me, that is the worst mindset to have because, for one, this mentality will forever keep you in the rat race. It will forever keep you on the treadmill of never being able to get beyond a certain level because you're not learning the skills of nurturing and things like that, right? You're not building a pipeline. Think about it, 6 to 9 months out. Guess what? 6 to 9 months comes pretty quickly. And if you're nurturing these people, all of a sudden you got these loans that are sitting around in the future waiting for you to do them. And so many people just don't see it from that perspective. So for anybody who's listening to this, think about your business from a long-term perspective, not from a 90-day window. I get it. You want deals that close in the next 90 days. Totally understand that. But if you ever want to get beyond the rat race or the treadmill of just 2 to 3 loans a month and get beyond that, you have to think long-term. You have to understand what it takes to build that long-term pipeline. And we see people that close deals that, you know, were leads that came in, you know, 2019, 2020, and they're closing them in 2023, 2024. So that is sometimes the cycle that a human being takes. And a lot of times people are 6 to 24 months out from buying a home when they're first starting to look, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For me, like, I am incredibly ADHD, and I've learned to kind of, like, you know, use that to my advantage. But of course, it also brings a lot of challenges with it. Sure. One of the biggest challenges with that is out of sight, out of mind, right? Like, if I have a client who doesn't qualify right now, even if I have intentions of keeping them in my pipeline, like, if I don't have a physical visual reminder of right. my long-term pipeline and my short-term pipeline, those folks, you know, can easily fall through the cracks. So it became as simple as having a whiteboard that was like 12 plus months out, right? And I would make a little note like credit repair or like student loans or that mm-hmm. doesn't have 2 years of self-employment history, like whatever. And it was so easy then because I'm like 60 days goes by, I'm checking in with that person. 90 days goes by, it's like a 5-minute phone call or a quick email and I'm staying top of mind. And it's like, it brings so much satisfaction when you are able to close those clients because you can look back and be like, dang, man, we've been working together truly for 2 years. And you get to know someone, you get to know what right. motivates them, what's important to them. And for me, that keeps my heart, you know, in it a little bit, which this is an industry, as you know, it'll beat you up. So it's, you yeah. gotta have those heart tie connections too.
Yeah, I think especially in moments like this, I think a lot of people get into the mortgage industry for the money. And I think a lot of people that stay in the mortgage industry during times like these are doing it because they have a why that's beyond just the money, right? Like, sure, you can make a ton of money in the good times. You can lose a ton of money in the bad times, right? I mean, the last 18, 24 months is a huge indicator of what can happen, right? From the highest of highs, you know, everybody had record production for 2 years to everybody lost 60% of their business in just basically a blink of an eye. So I agree, you have to have a why beyond that. And I think also you talked about is having those long-term connections. You work with them for a long time. Like, if you're the one that also takes that time to work with these people, these are people who are going to be loyal. They're going to come back to you in the future. And a lot of people don't think about the lifetime value of a client as well. They think about the one-time value, right? Like, hey, I'm going to close this transaction. But like, the average home buyer buys every roughly 11 years, according to monitor-based data.
Yep.
And in that time, they do 2 refinances. That's 4 transactions in 11 years.
And most they know people who are buying houses.
That too, yes. We're not even talking about referrals. But what that tells you is also only 19% of consumers are going back to the same loan officer.
Really?
So loan officers are failing miserably at retention. And again, because the problem is they're so focused on this 90-day churn that they never see the long-term vision. And by churning, I'm not saying it in a bad way, by working your database, you're always going to have people, especially if it gets to a certain size, you're always going to have people closing. And so, right. you know, it just comes down to building your database and then working your database and then continuing to work your database and not stopping to work your database, right? So yeah. if anything, work your database. So I want to touch on your book. Yeah. We'll get to some other strategies. I know you're doing some other cool things on social media. But let's talk about your book. I know you wrote that back in 2020. Interesting year. Obviously, 2020 was an interesting year. So tell me a little bit about that. Do you think that has an impact in the way you do business at all in, you know, we're in 2024 where it's not as virtual as it used to be? You're in 2020?
I do. Okay. I do. Yeah. So the book came about at a time where, I don't know if any other loan officers will relate to this, but before COVID hit, when it was like, it's still a rumor mill type of thing, right? Like, it was this weird thing that started in China and now there's these cases. And
right.
I remember it was like late February, early March, and we were starting to hear about how this could have devastating economic impacts. Sure. And I, as well as a lot of other loan officers, at least in my circle, were kind of like texting each other like, oh crap, what do you guys think this means? And everybody kind of had the same thing. It was like, you better double down on your marketing. You better get clear, because we all thought that what happened, like, we thought the opposite of that was going to happen. We
right,
thought it was
right.
going to be more like a 2023. And then obviously it had the opposite effect. But I immediately started thinking, okay, how am I going to set myself apart from my competition, both here locally, but that I can also use to kind of like get a bigger reach? And going back to, you know, authenticity and what feels authentic, what feels natural. I'm a writer at heart. I love the written word. I love writing. I love reading. So I just started, I'm like, what if I wrote a book? And so it started as like almost like a manual, like a how-to, that just kind of expanded into more of an actual book. It's still a short read, but I started gathering all of the questions that I was asked most frequently by first-time homebuyers and decided to kind of compile a how-to, right? Like, if you're starting the home purchase process and you have not bought and sold 15 homes before, what are some things that you need to know before you start the process and while you're in the process? So of course, that also kind of helped me kick off my personal brand at that time of Alexa, Get Me a Mortgage. totally capitalized on Amazon and used that to tee up my own personal brand and decided to name my book, Alexa, Get Me a Mortgage. And I noticed right away that that was one thing that nobody else was doing. I would take 10 copies and go to local offices, local real estate shops, and drop off 10 copies and say, hey, to your agents who are meeting with first-time homebuyers this week, have them take a copy of my book. Or if I got a referral and pre-approved somebody, and then even if they weren't a first-time homebuyer, they were just kind of like removed from the process for a long time and just getting back into it, I would pre-approve them and then mail them a copy of my book with like a little note inside. And it really, I think, helped set me apart just from a marketing perspective. That was something that nobody else in my community was doing. But it also kind of gave me a natural level of authority.
Right.
Because things that I assumed were common knowledge that I assumed most people knew, they did not, right? And so I was able to provide a lot more valuable knowledge to a lot more people that way.
I love it. And you're right. I mean, I think just like this podcast, it's interesting. Sometimes having a platform and a book and things like that, obviously it's a lot easier these days to publish a book than it ever was with Amazon, right? And things like that, but it still puts you in sort of rarefied air, because like writing a book, like not everybody does that. Like, yeah, I know maybe in our circle, there's more people that have written a book and there's more people that have a podcast and things like that. But in the general public, people don't just publish books. They don't just have a podcast, right? It just is not something that happens. And that creates that authority, that expertise, that almost aura of like, hey, you know, I'm in rarefied air. You wrote a book. That's crazy, right? And so it does create that authority. And I love that you were able to leverage that for social media. But then also, it's almost like you're using that like a lead magnet, but like a valuable lead magnet where like you're being able to give this thing of value to someone. I wanted to talk a little bit about what you said briefly. And that's this concept that the consumer doesn't really know as much as I thought they did. This is one of the biggest things that loan officers struggle with. And I think this is not just loan officers. I mean, I struggle with this as a marketer. I talk about stuff that, you know, I think it should be common knowledge and realize that I'm talking over people's head. I'm talking about pixels and crazy stuff like that. Loan officers do this a lot too. They talk about DTI and LTV and they start talking all these big words that are like, cool, they should know this, right? No, they shouldn't know this. So they do one transaction every 11 years or whatever. If you count the refis, maybe a couple more. And in this case, if they're a first-time homebuyer, they've probably never done this, right? Like they don't see this stuff every single day like you as a loan officer do. Loan officers see this every day. This is a concept called the curse of knowledge. And sometimes understanding this concept is like, I need to go back to the fundamentals. What do people need to know? Yeah. I worked for a mortgage company. Before I bought my house, I worked for a mortgage company. I thought we needed 20% down. I thought I wouldn't qualify for a mortgage. I thought all these things. I probably wasted 2 or 3 extra years from when I could have bought a home thinking that I needed all these things as I worked for a mortgage company. So that's someone who, as a consumer, I worked for a mortgage company. I didn't know that. It was a reverse mortgage company. So it's a little, you know, it's a little different, but still it was a mortgage company. I should have known. I could have asked someone easily and I didn't know that. And so that's what the story I try to tell loan officers is like, consumers don't know anything about anything. They don't know that they need to send all of the pages of their documents, like all that stuff, right? Like I know loan officers get so annoyed about this. Like they don't know. Like they assume that it's okay. Like there's nothing on that page. Why would I send it? Right? Like,
right.
And then you get frustrated and it's like, just because they don't know. So I love that you talked about that, because that's huge. And I know what you're doing as well is some cool stuff with social media. Before we get to the social media stuff though, I hear you're a famous dancer now.
That is hilarious. Far from famous. Yeah, that's funny. So the dancing thing was something that came up last year. There is a huge fundraiser that takes place every year in my community. And the proceeds benefit two groups. One is Literacy for Life, which is a local group here that provides English for adults in the community who obviously, you know, need to speak English and they do not speak English or English is their second language. And it has prevented them from furthering themselves professionally or educationally. So I love Literacy for Life. They're awesome. And then the other group that it benefits is Big Brothers, Big Sisters of America, which is a mentorship program for at-risk youth and teens. So two phenomenal groups. And it's a really fun way that we raise money for these groups. We basically host our own Dancing with the Stars here locally. So it's 10 professional dancers who are legitimately, that is their profession, is dancing. And they are paired with 10 people in the community who I'll say are well-connected, have a lot of connections, because again, the idea is to raise funds. And so I found myself getting nominated as a star, you know, for this show. And I'm philanthropy is something that is very near and dear to my heart, has been for the last 10 plus years. So when I found out that it was a fundraiser, I was kind of like, all right, yeah, totally, let's do it. And come to find out, dancing with a professional dancer when you have absolutely zero dance experience is really freaking hard. you have to put together a 3-minute, ballroom routine. I mean, like the whole shebang. But it's funny that through that experience, not only did I end up expanding my network tremendously, but I discovered a love of dance. I had no idea that I would fall in love with ballroom dancing like I have. So we actually ended up placing runner up last year when I was in the show, which was amazing, out of 9 couples. And then this year I came back to do an exhibition number with one of his very first stars from 2016 when my pros started doing the show. So we came back for like a little fun exhibition number. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Well, and to segue now into, you wouldn't have gotten that opportunity without a social media presence, I assume. And so my assumption is, based off of the things you're doing on social media, the exposure that you have on social media, that type of stuff, and obviously being connected within the mortgage and real estate industry in a small community, or maybe not even that small, but in a community that has massive opportunities. And I don't know if it's brought you any business or not, but it's given you the opportunity to, you know, expand your network, which I would think by default would create more business, at least over time, right? And so talk a little bit about some of your strategies that you are using. What is sort of the Alexa playbook for social media marketing, or what platforms are you really leveraging the most?
Yeah, so I would say the two platforms I am the most active on for social media marketing purposes would definitely come down to TikTok and Facebook, right? Okay. TikTok, I really love because it makes it so easy. And you could say the same thing for Instagram and Reels being the equivalent. It makes it so easy to put out high quality short form video content. Like, I remember I've been doing videos on social media since 2018. I mean, not before there were video editing apps like that existed, but it was certainly not on my radar. So I'm just straight up in my office with a tripod and a camera, like no editing, no captions, no fun filters, no like splicing and dicing, just like me sitting there talking about loans in my quiet little office and then uploading that video to Facebook. And I look back now and I like cringe at some of those videos, but I'm so glad that I just kept doing it, because there's this big argument that like, what's more important, quality, right? Or consistency. And I've always been on the consistency side of that argument. And the reason being is, if you do something consistently, quality follows consistency. Like consistency breeds quality. The more you do something, you will naturally get better at it, and the quality of your content will naturally improve. So it's been this journey from, you know, those like just really, really raw videos to TikTok, which I feel like gives you the ability to make really fancy videos. As far as my actual content, I like just talking about things, like you said, that you assume people know, but they probably don't, like the 3% down home ready, home possible loans that are out there, or why get an appraisal, or, you know, pros and cons of waiving certain contingencies. Just anything that could impact a home buyer's decision, small or large, like let's sit here and talk about it and really kind of get into the nitty gritty. I just think there's so many different topics out there within the mortgage sphere. And so you're never left without content, right? Like if I wake up one morning and I think I don't have anything to talk about or to post about, I'm not doing my job correctly.
I agree with that. And so we were like, well, I don't know what to talk about. I'm like, start writing down the questions that people ask you on a daily basis. I guarantee you there's probably 10 or 20 like pretty consistent questions that get asked. And then off of those 10 to 20 questions, there's probably ancillary sort of details around those things that you could talk about. In addition to that, like I'm assuming it's not just business type stuff, or maybe it is, I don't know, but are you posting stuff that's more organic, like life of Alexa on TikTok and some of these platforms? Obviously, I think on Facebook you are. I'm just curious what your strategy is on TikTok. Is it mostly educational, or is it also a mix of lifestyle?
Yeah, it's mostly educational. And I don't know why. You kind of bring up a good point. I thought so much about posting more personal stuff on my TikTok page, but I always like stop short because I'm like, that's Mortgage Alexa, right? Like nobody cares about my funny chihuahua and like all these like little sidebar anecdotal things that happen in my life on TikTok. That's what Facebook is for. And on Facebook, I'm pretty split. I would say about 50% of my content is professional and 50% of my content is personal. I do think that whatever platform you're on, people need to know that you're a real person, right? Like you can't be like a suit all the time, because I think you're going to come across as unapproachable and just maybe even unrelatable. But I think that there's a time and a place and a platform for both, whether or not you're mixing those, or you have one, you know, that's exclusively for professional content, one that's exclusively for personal content. I think there needs to be a good mix.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I was curious, because I know a lot of times when you're doing just video, it's like, it's a little different. Like, you know, when you're doing something like Facebook, it's a lot easier, I feel like, to put out content, especially because, you know, you have a smaller limit of friends on Facebook, whereas, I mean, you can get thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers on something like TikTok or even Instagram. So sometimes it's like, all right, what sort of content makes the most sense on these platforms? And I think it does make sense. And I'm just curious if it would work pretty well, especially if people are following you consistently, if you started to talk about the Chihuahua or had the Chihuahua in one of your videos, even if it is a professional video, right? And so you're just some thoughts there from my perspective. Is I've always told people that like the thing that people care about the most is less business stuff and more the who are you as a human. And that's the most thing that brings people, that makes you more relatable. And I remember way back in the day, I remember one guy saying something like, yeah, I just felt like you were too busy and like, you know, you were just almost inaccessible, like you talked about. And I was like, I was like, holy crap, like I don't want that persona to be out there. Like, I always want to feel like I'm accessible. People can ask me questions. You know, they can't say, can I pick my brain, but they can ask me questions. I'm just kidding. They can say whatever they want, but for whatever reason, pick my brain just triggers me. Just ask me the question. From that perspective, when you're making the videos, are you using just your phone or what's sort of the setup? Like, how do you get people started on using these platforms?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm really glad you asked that because like, keep it simple. If you could see like what I'm using for my ring light right now, it's like a $20 tripod ring light duo that I got from Walmart like 5 years ago. And I still use that bad boy every single day for making videos. I don't use any additional software. I know there's so many different apps that can allow you to just splice and dice, or, you know, you can film it on one platform and then upload that video into TikTok or edit it here and then upload that. And for me personally, that makes my brain like go scrambled eggs. And then I shut down and I'm like, oh, I'm just not going to do anything.
Right.
I am a big fan of less is more. Get a clean script, right? Like, clean up your message, be concise, be confident, shoot that thing, and don't overthink it. Like, don't delete video because you said three times or because you talked for 5 extra seconds about that thing that, you know, like I just spent so much time nitpicking so many of my videos and so much of my content when I needed to just be executing. And the more you do that, you know, first of all, you just naturally get better at it over time. But you also start to learn, like I was growing my following. I think I'm at somewhere around 14,000 followers on TikTok just by consistently posting videos. There's really nothing in my content that's like super fancy or that requires any type of special skill set, right? It's more about me being authentic, talking about topics that matter, topics that people care about, and also leveraging narratives. Like I love stories and I've started to notice that people love stories in narrative form. So while yes, of course, in our industry, you have to be careful to always protect the client, there's a lot of great ways that you can take what happened yesterday, that like, oh crap moment, and kind of, you know, make that a narrative. Sometimes it's a success story and sometimes it's a, you know, proceed with caution type of story. But I love narratives for a video as well.
Yeah, stories are the best. I mean, stories sell, right? At the end of the day, like that's really what people want to hear. They want to hear stories. They don't want to hear facts. They don't want to hear, you know, here's how to get a mortgage. They want to hear, here's how I helped Johnny get a mortgage, even though he got denied twice by two of the lenders and I was able to do X, Y, Z to get him into a home. And, you know, now he loves me and he was crying at the closing table. Like just like a story like that, right? Obviously, I just made that up off the top of my head, but like, I'm sure you deal with that as a loan officer on a regular basis. You know, yeah, you have your cookie cutter loans, but you have your people that, you know, maybe you had to work a little harder for it. Maybe you last minute had this thing pop up and you can warn people like, hey, make sure that you don't freaking buy a car, you know, on closing day or buy furniture at closing, right? Like, you know, like things like that, right? People don't know, right? Again, this is one of the things that loan officers get frustrated with is like consumers don't know. They're like, I moved into the house. Like I need furniture. Let me go buy furniture. Like, no, do not do that. I've already told you that 7 times. Do not do that. But again, I think that's something that you can use as content. And I like that you talked about, I mean, I'm assuming, would you just use a TikTok platform to edit it?
Yeah. Everything I do is on TikTok. And then I've started doing more with Reels and same there. I will sometimes film the video just on my camera app, literally on my iPhone and upload that video, but nothing beyond that. I think those platforms are amazing because they give you so many tools to create quality content without having to reinvent the wheel or invest in some of those, you know, higher level platforms.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think people do overcomplicate it. And when you're first getting started, like you said, you're going to suck. And people ask me the same thing, like, man, how are you so good at video? I'm like, I've made thousands of videos at this point. Right. I've done, you know, this is like episode, I don't know, 115 or something like that. I don't remember what episode this is going to be. Obviously, there's going to be a little tag that says what episode it is, but we're recording this. I don't even know. Again, I've done tons of trainings and I've just gotten comfortable on camera, but I go back, I show people my old videos when I had my license and I was trying to be a reverse mortgage loan officer. I'm like, hi, my name is Luke and I'm a reverse mortgage specialist. And I'm like, that's how I sounded. Like, I didn't realize like what I needed to do. And so it's pretty funny to go back and look at those videos. But at the same time, like, you don't get to being good on camera without having the bad. And the other thing to note is people probably aren't going to see many of your first videos. If you're not consistently putting out videos, you're not probably going to get very much reach. You probably don't have a lot of followers. Who cares? Just post it. Get used to it. Build the muscle. Right. And then you get better over time. And you talked about it. Yes, you can use something like TikTok, but there's tools. There's AI tools like Opus Clip that will edit it for you, right? Like, there's things that you can do that make it even simpler, especially these days, right? When Alexa started, there was no AI. There was no CapCut. There was no Descript. There was no InShot or InVideo or whatever that one is on your phone. And like, those are all tools that are now available that are super easy and a lot of times free that make it super easy. Use your phone. These phones are crazy, like, powerful. The quality of camera is ridiculous already. You don't need fancy equipment. Get a little light. Make sure you look good. But overall, good audio. And truthfully, you said value is not that important, but value is. But it doesn't have to be valuable in terms of like a fancy edited video. The content needs to be valuable, right? Yes. The delivery will get better over time and it'll get more engagement, things like that. But the value has to be in the content mostly. Like, what are you delivering? What is the thing that you're doing? Make sure that's super valuable, because then over time you can get better at the delivery, you can get better at the lighting, you can get better at the camera, you can get better at the scripting. But the value needs to be in what is the content that you're delivering. So I think that's a huge sort of caveat. I know that's not what you meant, that value is not important, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, do the consistency over time, but your value is like, hey, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Bring that value, and that's huge.
It's amazing to see also over time, when you first start posting videos, like you were saying, it can be discouraging because you're like, oh, that video got one comment and two likes.
Yeah, right.
But pay attention to those views. If that video got 150 views or 250 views, I've had referrals, people literally like slide into my DMs that have never liked a video of mine, that have never commented on a video of mine, that have never engaged with me on social media, that have been watching every single one of my videos for 2 years. And now they're sending me a referral because I'm talking about something that applies to their client today. So don't discount the amount of people that are seeing your content that are simply not engaging with it. That is still a part of your audience. And that's a great way to passively build your audience over time. But you can't build that without doing the work, right? Without consistently putting out video content or whatever your content is.
100%. You need to have a content strategy, whether it's posting written content on social media every day, whether it's making a video every day, whatever it is, or making two videos a week, right? It doesn't have to be something like that's crazy, but it has to be consistent, because at the end of the day, people honor consistency. And that's part of like your value. If you can show up consistently over an extended period of time, that's where you're going to get results. A lot of people give up quickly. It's something like organic marketing. It's not a short game. It's a 6+ month game of, hey, if you don't consistently post for 6 months and you don't continue to do that, like, that's one thing that I honestly don't love about social media and why I've gone so hard on YouTube recently, is because I've put out so much content, so much good content on social media that's gone in like 24 to 48 hours, like completely gone. And there's no use for it at that point. It's like that treadmill, but it's also so powerful and so valuable. And I think there is a ton of value for people to do that. Obviously, do the fundamentals too. Call the leads, call the realtors, do the work, right? But be consistent with social media as well. I wanted to touch a little bit at CMS. You have been doing some mentoring, newer loan officers, things like that. Like, walk me through what that looks like when you are mentoring a new loan officer. What's sort of the main things that you talk about? How do you help them get up to speed? Now, as you know, getting kind of back into full-time production, what is like some of those strategies that you tell loan officers to use as you're sort of mentoring them?
Yeah. So a lot of the loan officers that I worked with last year, some of them were coming into our company that were newly licensed, that had never even taken their first application. Some of them had gotten their feet wet. Maybe they've been licensed for a year to two, but they don't have, you know, that consistency. And then, of course, I had some folks that were veterans and they were maybe coming in from a different business model and they were just trying to learn the broker side, the broker channel, and kind of fundamentally how to get going. So depending on who I was working with, who I was mentoring, my approach was a little bit different. Vast majority of the folks that I worked with were newly licensed loan officers. And what's interesting is they all had questions that had nothing to do with loans. Like, they weren't asking me about FHA guidelines or conventional guidelines or how to run AUS or how to interpret a credit report. They're like, hey, how do I get a realtor to like have a lunch meeting with me. And then when I get to the lunch meeting, what do I say? So we started just kind of building those fundamental building blocks of what is your value proposition? If you don't have one, you need to create one. And by the way, you should have two separate value propositions, one for your agents and one for your consumer, one for your borrower. Those are two separate things, right? Start there. And then when you are in front of that agent, do not sit down and start selling your turn times and your rates and every other thing that every other loan officer has sold them at a coffee meeting. Ask them about them. Ask them about the pain points in their business. Ask them about their life, about their hobbies. You know, there were so many interactions that I had early on with agents where we would have a 30-minute meeting talking about something we had in common without even talking about business. And 9 times out of 10, those were the agents that I ended up closing a few deals with, right? Sure. And it was because they liked me as a person, not because I had the best rates or the fastest turn times. I knew what I was good at, right? That I would sell those qualities, but not before I really got to know who I'm working with and how to speak to them. Right. So from there, we would kind of say, okay, once you start feeling comfortable with talking to an agent, let's get you marketing on social media so that you can attract some clients to pre-approve to bring to those agents. You know, we talked a lot about stuff that you and I just talked about, how to be consistent on social media, how to get into video content, how to leverage just social graphics, right? How to host classes, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And just kind of progressing so that when they did get that application, then it kind of became a transition of, okay, now let's talk about how to take a clean 1003. But and truth be told, technology these days makes it so easy. You don't have to be like the most skilled loan officer out there to take a clean application, but you're not going to get that application if you don't know how to talk to people and you don't know how to stay in front of your market.
100%. That's huge. And I think that's one of the things that unfortunately most mortgage companies fail at is actually educating their loan officers on how to do that, right? I mean, you know, it's why we have such a, I would call it an incestuous industry where people don't want to train up people. So they just go and pay someone a bonus and they steal them from the next person. Then they sue each other because they're like, okay, I don't know how to actually train new loan officers what they need to do to get business because my whole value prop is just go call realtors. And, you know, yeah, that's great in a numbers game, but what do you say when you talk to a realtor? You know, how do you reach out to them? What are some strategies? And, you know, there's a lot of cool ways that you can build value with real estate agents that doesn't mean you have to cold call, or you can cold call, but you use some ways to warm up those cold calls. I mean, I talk about this all the time, like social media, go add 50 or 100 real estate agents, not at the same time, because if you do that, you'll probably get shadow banned, but add 5 to 10 a day, whatever, for a couple months, maybe 30 to 40% of them will add you, and then start to freaking comment on their stuff, like their stuff. Shoot them a DM saying, hey, man, I love your content. This is great. Hey, I love the story about your dog. Next thing you know, you can call them and say, hey, you know, been watching your stuff. Love your content. You know, would love to get together sometime for lunch. Love to get together for coffee, whatever. Now, all of a sudden, it's not a cold call. It's a warm call. But yeah, it's technically a cold call. But like,
yeah,
not
this day and age, there's no excuse for an interaction being like ice cold. Yes, you're still going to have cold calls. That's a fundamental part of it. Like, that's what we do here. But at the same time, you have so many opportunities to warm up that contact before you even ever reach out to them. Mm-hmm. And to touch on what you said about the lack of education and training, interestingly enough, the folks that came to us in the last, I would say 12 to 18 months, that came from other companies, right? Like, we were not their first mortgage company that they had worked with. I asked everybody this question, why? Like, what caused you to look for something different? And 100% of them, 100% said that their primary motivating factor was a lack of resources and training and education. They didn't know how to be a loan officer. They were hired as newly licensed and then started kind of floundering. So I just think that's so pivotal in our industry.
Well, and companies typically do a decent job of educating them on loan products and the stuff, right? The stuff that's going to keep you out of jail, but not the stuff that's actually going to bring you business and make you money or make the company money, which to me blows my mind. I'm like, you would think that they would be incentivized to train their people to actually have good conversations with agents, right? Like, okay, cool. They just say cold call agents. I mean, I remember when I was an AE, I was told, here's a list of people that have closed a reverse mortgage in the last 12 months. Call them. What do I say? Right. Just call them. That was what I was told. Just call them. I'm like, okay. I didn't do that very long. Before I knew marketing, I figured out ways to send out email blasts with value and show them, hey, here's how you can strike. You know, it took a while, but I became top one or two at the company. And that was because I was giving value, value, value. Honestly, I didn't realize what I was doing. I just was sending out these crappy little flyers that I made on Word doc and I screenshot it and send it out as an email. That was probably a terrible email. but it worked, right? Because I was giving value.
Yeah, that goes back to like the consistency breeds quality. Like, didn't have to be an ace in the hole when you started, right? But it gets to that point.
Yep. Yep. And it's wild to me because, like, now that I've, you know, been doing marketing for the last 5-6 years, I'm like, there's a million strategies for loan officers to get business. And obviously, as a marketer, it's like direct to consumer, but so many other ways of doing it. I don't think most loan officers, honestly, consumer direct or leads, buying leads for most loan officers is probably not the best way to do business, right? I mean, because it takes a whole different, like you talked about, like there's so many things that you can do. Find the things that you're good at. Some people love cold calling. They love pounding the phones. Some people hate that, right? So why would you pound the phones if you're the type of person that hates doing that? Go build the relationships. Go network with people. You know, hire someone to freaking pound the phones for you. Hire someone to send the emails for you, right? I mean, there's countless ways that you can build your business, but you have to do that with consistency. And I think that's one of the big keys that we've talked about today is consistency. So real quick, as we close out here, if you were to start over again, go out there, get business, like what would you suggest? Or maybe these new loan officers that you were training, what is like the primary, the number one thing that you would tell them to do today to get business? Hard-hitting questions.
So there's a lot of things. I'll go with something that's probably helped me most consistently in the last 3 years. And it's more of like a mantra, but it's micro changes, right? Make micro changes. Meaning if you are someone that's like, okay, I don't really know where to start, pick one thing. Pick one thing that you think you can kind of sink your teeth into. Like the idea of putting together a class like freaks you out and you don't know where to start, don't start there. But if you think you could bring yourself to film 2 videos a week, start there and stay focused on that. Like just execute 2 videos a week for 3 months, 4 months. Don't bring in all this other technology or sign up for this thing or sign up for that thing or, you know, try to do this and 3 other things. Like pick one thing, really execute it, really focus on it. And you will find that once you feel super comfortable, like that's what I did with videos. And it got to a point where videos did not feel arduous to me. I could put up a 2-minute TikTok and like 15 minutes. And that's like scripting, filming, editing, and everything. And so I felt comfortable doing that. So then I could say, all right, now I need to get better cleaning up my CRM, staying in front of my database. So then for another 4 months, right, that was the only change I made was consistent follow-up and cleaning my database and adding quality contact information to my database. And what I found is at the end of 12 months, I had really cleaned up and executed a lot of things in my business simply by making one small change at a time for a specific period of time and just kind of building on that, building on those habits.
I love that because I was at the AimFuse conference in 2019 and Gary Vee was on stage and he was like, yeah, everybody, all you loan officers need to be on every single social platform. You need to be putting out 40 pieces of content a day. I'm like, that is literally the worst advice I have ever heard. I'm sorry, Gary Vee. No one has a 4-person team putting out content for them. That's impossible for anyone to do. What's a better advice is get consistent in putting out, if it's one piece of content a week, if that's all you can commit to, great. Do one piece of content. If you can do more, great as well, right? I mean, if you do 5 a week, perfect. That's even better. If you can do 10 a week, even better, right? Again, it's one thing at a time. And interestingly enough, I have an executive coach I've been working with the last 8 months. Someone who's built the business. I have, I don't know, 15 people on my team, 16 people on my team. And he's taught me so much around literally the same concept of like, we're trying to move in 20 different directions at the same time. And so we're getting none of them done, right? We're just spinning our wheels in 7 different ways, 10 different ways. And it was like, no, we're going to finish one project. And all of a sudden, this 6-month timeline for a project turned into 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Because instead of working on 6 projects or 10 projects, we worked on one and we just focus, got that done, moved on to the next one, focus, got that done. We've accomplished so much more in the last 8 months than we probably did in the last 3 years in terms of some of these projects that have been on our plate. So it's a huge concept that I think is valuable that loan officers need to understand. If someone wanted to connect with you online, learn more about, you know, what you're doing, what's the best way they can connect with you?
So that would be probably Facebook, TikTok, or my website. My website is alexagetmeamortgage.com. On Facebook, I am Alexa Ray. Technically, my name is Alexa Ray Faithful. But interestingly enough, Facebook does not allow you to change your name on Facebook more than twice. And I guess sometime in 10 or 15 years, I changed my name. So anyways, Facebook or TikTok, I am also Alexa Get Me a Mortgage on TikTok.
Awesome. My sort of big takeaways from today was really coming down to consistency and doing one thing consistently over time. This seems to be a trend with a lot of these podcasts that I'm doing is consistency, right? So many people like to give up on things after whatever couple weeks, I always kind of go back to this Alex Hormozi quote where he talked about when he was first starting his gym company, he talked to a guy and the guy's like, we do these flyers. We send out these flyers. So he's like, cool. He puts out 300 flyers and, you know, the guy hits him up. He's like, hey, how did it go? He's like, I don't know. I didn't get anything from it. And the guy was like, well, how many flyers did you send out? He's like, oh, like 300. He's like, 300? We don't do anything less than like 10,000 or something like that. It was like some crazy number like that. And he's like, sometimes we don't just have to double our efforts. We have to 100 times our efforts or whatever that number is, right? And so it's like, we have to understand that it takes what it takes. The market is the market. And it might take, you know, working a little bit harder or maybe a lot of bit harder or a lot of bit smarter in this market to get the results we're looking for. So thank you so much for your time today, Alexa. It was great. Super, super valuable. And for anybody who is listening to this that is looking for some help on flipping the status quo on real estate agents and learning more about our marketing system, go to flipthestatusquo.com. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning into the Loans on Demand podcast on loansondemandpodcast.com.